Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing our graduates to hit the ground running.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 5 weeks from tomorrow, Americans elect a new president. 36 days. Less than a month ago, Republicans were riding a post-convention Sarah Palin high. After financial meltdown and Friday's first debate, polls show Obama pushing further ahead. Anything can happen, but the time is narrowing, and the campaigns know it. This hour, On Point, on the home stretch to November 4th, we'll go deep on the polls, the electoral map, and the challenges McCain and Obama face with 36 days to the vote. You can join the conversation, swing voters. Did Friday's debate swing you? McCain campers, Obama campers, how are you feeling with 5 weeks to go? Can either candidate still win? With us today from New York is Mark Halperin, editor-at-large and senior political analyst for Time magazine, author of the very influential blog on Time.com's website, The Page. He's a political analyst for ABC News and author of The Undecided Voter's Guide to the Next President and The Way to Win, Taking the White House in 2008. Mark Halperin, great to have you with us. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here. Thank you.
With us from Chicago is Nate Silver, founder of 538.com. 538.com, a polling and political analysis website that's got a lot of buzz this year. Nate Silver, thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you, Tom.
And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly Magazine. Jack, good to have you.
Hello, Tom. Mark and Nate.
Mark, last time we talked was at the conventions. A lot of water under and over and all around the dam. The dam may be breaking on the financial front since then. How do you see this race as we sit here 36 days, Mark, before the vote?
Well, reserving my right to have a different view tomorrow.
Yes.
I think Senator Obama's in a very strong position. I don't like to predict the outcome, and I want to emphasize that I think things can change again. But as a snapshot of where we are today, it's all about the Electoral College, as everybody on this listening knows. And in terms of the Electoral College today, because of a variety of things that have occurred over the last 10 days or so, I think Senator Obama is in a very strong position to win this race.
An unassailable position from what you've seen in the months we've been through, from what you've seen in the last month. There's a lot of volatility here. John McCain was behind and pulled up strongly after the GOP convention. I mean, nothing's unassailable. We understand that. But we've got big events underway here. Strong at the moment, strong enough to – does it look durable to you?
Wouldn't bet the house on it, but it is McCain has missed an opportunity at one of the debates. There are fewer days now left than there were yesterday. And I think John McCain has to have two things happen to win this election. Mm. He has to disqualify Barack Obama as an acceptable president for enough Americans to win. And he has to have the election not be revolving around George Bush's record and George Bush. And the events of the last 10 days have made both of those much less likely. And therefore, again, things could change, but on the current trajectory, Barack Obama is in quite a strong position.
Nate Silver, you've got your finger on the pulse of a whole lot of polling there at 538.com. Take us in nationally and to some of those key electoral college states. What do you see?
Well, I think the question you asked at the outset, whether either candidate can still win, the mere fact that we're asking that question now is not a question we would have asked, I think, a week ago. Right now, it appears like Obama has about a 4 or a 5-point national lead, might be a little bit bigger, might be a little bit smaller. You know, at that level, the Electoral College becomes less important. You know, you're not going to lose the Electoral College if you win the popular vote by 4 or 5 points. But there are some regions where Obama's doing especially well or not as well. You know, one region along the Atlantic coast, North Carolina, all of a sudden looks like a toss-up. McCain's moving resources into North Carolina. So is Obama. Virginia, Obama seems to be ahead now by 4 or 5 points. That's usually a red state. You know, on the other hand, a state like Ohio, maybe his numbers are a little bit more sluggish, but they feel like they have so many ways to win right now, they don't necessarily need an Ohio. But
they,
you know,
being Obama's camp.
Obama's camp, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think they feel like, you know, the Democrats are kind of 0 for 3 on Ohio in 2000, 2004. Then they lost the primary there and kind of underwhelmed expectations. So I think if you kind of woke them up on Election Day and talked to David Axelrod and said, what state do you want this to come down to? The last one on his list would be Ohio. He'd say, you know, he'd say Virginia, Colorado, you know, North Carolina, even Indiana, I think, Florida even before Ohio. That's kind of the state they're a little bit afraid of.
Jack Beatty, what are you seeing out there?
Well, three states, Colorado, Iowa, and New Mexico, are Iowa is solidly blue, Colorado trending that way, and so too New Mexico. If Obama can carry those three states and hold on to Kerry's states, he wins. He wins narrowly, but he wins. Just looking today at pollster.com, the trend line in Colorado was sharply up, less so in New Mexico. And as I say, Iowa is pretty much decided. So that might be his block right there for a minimal victory. On the other hand, look at McCain. He's close here in New Hampshire, a Kerry state. It's closer than anybody in the Obama camp would want in Pennsylvania. What is it, 4 points? And in Minnesota, another Kerry state, that's very close. So there's a possibility that he could take what he lost in these other states, he could win back in those three states.
Mark Halpern, get into the electoral map with us for a moment here. Several ways it could go for Obama, and maybe some McCain victory scenarios in there as well. What's looking likely to you? You know, how do the tumblers turn down at that granular state level right now, most likely?
Well, most of the red states, the states George Bush won once or twice in most cases in 2000, will stay red, and most of the blue Gore-Kerry states will stay blue. We're dealing with about 10 states that will decide this. Most of them are familiar states to those who played with the Electoral College roulette the last two cycles. States like Ohio and Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. Wisconsin, Minnesota, states that have been close or at least hotly contested. The main two differences I've already mentioned are probably Colorado and Virginia. There are lots of combinations for Barack Obama to win that include those two. There aren't very many combinations for either to win, we should say. Even with Obama's decided advantage now, it's because he has more Electoral College combinations, but he doesn't have too many. And most of them, I think, involve Colorado, Virginia, or both. They're very important, and they're states that neither Democrat won the last two. They're both have been solid red states at the presidential level.
So if he doesn't have that many options, and who knows exactly how they're going to go, his lead is up in the national polls. Could we have another one of these scenes where you've got maybe Obama with a national majority and McCain with the win? Is that still out there, Mark?
It's absolutely possible, particularly because I think you'll see Barack Obama winning big majorities in states like New York, New Jersey, Illinois, California, where running up the popular vote win, of course, gets him exactly the same number as electoral votes as winning by just one vote. So it's possible, but I think unlikely, particularly as was already said, if he does win a significant advantage in the popular vote. It would be extraordinary for Barack Obama to get to 52%, 53%, 54% of the popular vote, however. Not just because he's new to politics, not just because he's an African-American and there's some indications that that will be a drag on his overall total, but it has been very hard for any Democrat to get above 50% of the popular vote, let alone well above 50%.
Nate Silver, if you look for a McCain winning scenario out there, given the polls you see across the states, what's the most likely McCain winner through the Electoral College?
Well, I do think Pennsylvania is a state that might flip red. It's a state where Sarah Palin, I think there are a lot of kind of moderate Catholic pro-life voters in Pennsylvania. She's played pretty well to that group, but still, you know, it is polling for Obama by a couple of points. I mean, he really has three states to play offense, which are Pennsylvania, Michigan, and New Hampshire, whereas Obama has, excuse me, 8 or 10 states that we've kind of mentioned before. So that's why, you know, if you're McCain, I think the question now is, do I consolidate in one or two of these states? Will I kind of pull resources out of Wisconsin to go into Pennsylvania? Do I try and contest Iowa, where he's going to be tomorrow, or should I just try and focus on Michigan? You know, he's got to decide if he wants to play for a big map or just kind of focus and try and pull an upset, because it would be an upset at this point, and I think one of those big two electoral states, Michigan or Pennsylvania.
Of course, Friday night, each trying to deliver their message. McCain looking for that naive, dangerous tag to put on Obama. Obama looking to put the you're wrong, John, tag on McCain. Here's one of those moments. John McCain saying that readiness to meet with rogue foreign leaders was dangerous.
What Senator Obama doesn't seem to understand, that if without precondition you sit down across the table from someone who has called Israel a stinking corpse and wants to destroy that country and wipe it off the map, you legitimize those comments. This is dangerous. It isn't just naive. It's dangerous. And so we just have a fundamental difference of opinion.
Dangerous, naive, dangerous. Senator Obama wanted to get the "you were wrong" message out there. Here, responding to John McCain's assertion that the surge in Iraq worked, and he hadn't supported it.
John, you like to pretend like the war started in 2007. You talk about the surge. The war started in 2003. Sure. And at the time when the war started, you said it was going to be quick and easy. You said we knew where the weapons of mass destruction were. You were wrong.
Wrong. Wrong. Mark Halperin will talk more about the debate, but your top line on what we saw Friday?
An opportunity for John McCain to, again, change the dynamic, which he must do to win. I don't believe he did. Of course, it's subjective to say who did better in most debates, and particularly one without any memorable moments or big moments. I thought John McCain did worse. I thought he talked too much in Washington jargon. I thought he failed to break through in trying to create contrast with Barack Obama that he would need to win, and he didn't change the dynamic of the race. That having been said, I thought Barack Obama, for his part, did well. He wasn't nervous. I thought he, a la John Kennedy in 1960, a la Ronald Reagan in 1980, he stood on the stage with the more experienced candidate, the better-known candidate, and he did well.
Jack Beatty, any breakthroughs Friday night to your ear and eye?
No, I don't think so. I think I agree with what's been said. And also the polling bears out that McCain didn't do well, especially the focus groups, which showed that independent and undecided voters were impressed by Obama. As someone in one of the blogs put it, if McCain may have won the debate, but he lost the interview, that Obama won the interview. And that for a lot of voters just tuning in for the first time, they had heard that this man was unprepared, and he clearly knew a lot about everything he said. So it was hard to make the judgment that he didn't have the knowledge to be about foreign affairs to be president.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the presidential campaign with 36 days to go to November 4th. McCain, Obama, and where they're pushing now. Mark Halperin with us, editor-at-large and senior political analyst for Time, does the page there at time.com's website, author of The Undecided Voter's Guide to the Next President. Nate Silver joins us from Chicago, founder of 538.com, a hot polling and political analysis website. Our own Jack Beatty is here. Of course, both campaigns spinning like mad right after the debate to say their guy win it, putting out their own ads to make that point. Here's John McCain's.
I'm John McCain, and I approve this message.
Barack Obama's answers at the first presidential debate.
Do you have something directly to say, Senator Obama, to Senator McCain about what he just said?
Well, I think Senator McCain's absolutely right that we need more responsibility. Well, Senator McCain is absolutely right that the earmarks process has been abused. John mentioned the fact that business taxes on paper are high in this country, and he's absolutely right.
Is Barack Obama ready to lead? No.
Simple message. They want you to remember. Is he ready to leave? Absolutely right. Barack Obama's campaign released its own ad right after the debate.
Number of minutes in debate, 90. Number of times John McCain mentioned the middle class, 0. McCain doesn't get it. Barack Obama does.
The fundamentals of the economy have to be measured by whether or not the middle class is getting a fair shake. And when you look at your tax policies, you are neglecting people who are really struggling right now. I think that is a continuation of the last 8 years, and we can't afford another 4.
I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message.
We can't afford another 4 of those, and McCain doesn't get it. The big Obama message right there with the music of hope right behind. Mark Halperin, Nate Silver, and Jack Beatty with us. Let's take a call from Hilton Head, South Carolina. John, you're on the air. What do you think, John?
Hi. I'm basically an undecided, and I have been kind of waiting and watching the last few weeks to try and see which way I'm leading. And I think the debate kind of cemented it for me. Just the economy and everything that's happened, I just don't think I can take another term of Republicans. I know John McCain's trying to distance himself from President Bush, but I just don't think I can take any more of the same party. I'm really looking for change. And just the visual of the debate, that just did it for me. You know, you've got these two people on the podium. One is an older man, and one is a fine, upstanding younger man. And, you know, just that visual just did it for me. I was like, do I really want to stay with the same old party? It just seems so rusty and I just felt that did it for me. And I have a lot of Republican friends as well who said the same thing, that, you know.
John, what about the ready to lead question that McCain wants to hang around Obama? The question, does it bother you? Is it solved?
Does it bother me?
Do you think Obama's ready to lead?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't, you know, from the debate itself, I didn't see anything that indicated that Obama wasn't ready. I think he was just as knowledgeable as McCain was. I just don't see any relevance to the question that, you know, Obama doesn't have experience. I think he is just as qualified as McCain to lead, even more so just because of the fact that he isn't as entrenched in the politics like McCain has been for years.
John, thanks for your call. Mark Halperin, nobody's saying that it was hit out of the park by either candidate on Friday night. Jack sees a win anyway in the polls and on the stage for Obama. You know, maybe not a crushing debate victory, but winning the interview, I guess, winning people's confidence by not blowing it in any way, looking you know, more than competent up there. How do you see that performance, Mark?
Well, to say it just that way, people wanted to be comfortable with them. And again, I mentioned before the analogy to Kennedy in 60, Reagan in 80. Mm-hmm. Barack Obama had a chance to stand side by side with John McCain. Some people, and I include myself in that, thought Obama was making a mistake not agreeing to the frequent town meetings that McCain had proposed for just that reason. People need to see Barack Obama as an acceptable alternative. If he can stand up with John McCain in the last two debates as well as he did in the first one, again, I think he would be very, very difficult to beat.
Is the ready-to-lead question resonating, Nate Silver, in polls? Can you tell? Voters looking at Barack Obama relatively new to Washington and the ready-to-lead issue.
Well, one problem that, excuse me, that John McCain has is that advantage on readiness does not really translate to the economy. On foreign policy, sure, and any kind of, you know, kind of red phone crisis, but on the economy, voters think Obama's just as ready to lead as McCain. So as that becomes kind of 90% of the debate, then McCain really kind of loses his Trump card. It's kind of a very vulnerable position for him.
Mark Halper and I saw a report here when Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan had their debate matchup in 1980, 80 million viewers, 57 million on Friday night. I mean, it's quite a lot, but I wonder what's happened in this country when you had 80 million in 80, 57 million now. The issues certainly seem as grand now as they seemed in 1980.
I think there's something pretty clear going on there. Not that there's not great interest in this election and the issues, just the opposite. Mm-hmm. It was this, they decided to do it on a Friday night, which I said from the beginning of the announcement of the schedule was a mistake. It's simply not a big television viewing night. And the other thing is, because of the financial crisis, you did not see the big pregame run-up on television, radio, and elsewhere leading to the debate, letting people know that it's going on. And so I think a lot of people probably missed it, didn't even know it was happening. And again, because it's a Friday night, people are going to be out and about, not as likely to be home. And I think that accounts for missing tens of millions of viewers.
Jack, Barack Obama may, by your lights, and polls may have won the interview, as you said, but no haymaker here, no... Good Lord, John, look at this economy and look at the mess around the world. And it didn't seem like he really hung some, major raft of woe around McCain's neck in that debate to me.
No, and I think he's in danger of falling beneath the level of events. I mean, the words that are used in today's New York Times, placid, serene. You know, that's not the mood of the public. The public doesn't feel placid and serene. And his very strengths, to be placid and serene, can look like detachment and almost cold-bloodedness. And I think, frankly, I think his response to this bailout crisis evinces that. He's been acting more like a leader of Congress who has to, think about putting together a majority than like a presidential candidate. I would have had him say, look at $700 billion, that's 700 times what we will be investing in alternative energy next year. I would have had him say that. I would have also had him say the only way this is going to happen is if the affluent pay for it. Taxes on millionaires, surtaxes over several years to pay for this, not a dime from the middle class. Of course, that's a non-starter politically in the Congress. The Republicans would vote against it, but he's not the congressional leader. And I think he really fell beneath the public anger there on this issue.
Let's get a call from Pensacola, Florida. Nicholas, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello, sir. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm basically going to vote for McCain. I do represent a minority group, but I'm kind of leery of Obama's comments of the we and they. The presidential elections have been, I don't know, I think they're kind of overplayed. I'm more interested in these senators and congressmen and getting our representatives to represent us.
Nicholas, let me ask you, what makes you think you're part of a minority group in favoring John McCain?
Oh, not in favoring him. I'm American Indian.
I see. And you think he's got your interest more in mind because of his support for casino gambling or something else?
No. As I said, I was just afraid of some of Senator Obama's comments as far as the we and they stuff. I don't know what that entails. I think America's really suffering with the immigration and the minority support. I'd like to see America turn back around to a fair playing field for everybody.
Nicholas, we've got it, and we thank you for your call. Yes, a lot of we and they on the economy. That very much on people's minds as a $700 billion ready to go off to Wall Street. Let's take a call from Somerville, Massachusetts, and Joe. Joe, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
And I want to say that it's a question for me about leadership and leadership skills and the actions of either person,
yeah.
McCain or Obama, and what happened last week. For me, the leadership action of what Obama told me was, I need to let the people who have to make these decisions and write the bill do their jobs before I get involved with this. McCain just blew up, ran down to Washington, said, I'm going to help solve everything going on. And that just muddied the waters for me. That's not leadership skills. That's really dysfunctional management skills.
Did you come into last week favoring McCain or Obama?
I am one of the last people in who are conservative in nature and Republicans here in Massachusetts. I'm one of the dying breed here in Massachusetts. I don't agree that we should probably... I didn't agree with a bailout of Wall Street because I believe in small government. However, it's not about Wall Street. It's about Main Street. And this whole $700 billion deal is about putting liquidity back into the marketplace. It's about letting lenders on the local level loan to the car dealership so they can buy cars so they can sell them to consumers. It's about jobs. It's about liquidity. It's about the credit market and get it jump-started again before we have people, more businesses going out of business.
So get the bailout done, you'd say, but you don't like the way John McCain went about juggling that. Mark Halperin, how about this financial crisis we're in and how it plays out? I mean, we saw it last week, the whole country just on fire with it. May well be again this week. Who knows what the markets are going to do and, of course, the plan in Congress. How do you see that big whale, Leviathan of an issue, swimming on through this next month as we head toward November, Mark?
Well, let's see how quickly Congress can pass it. Most people believe it's on a glide path to passage, but let's see if it can get through both houses and actually pass and signed into law by the president. Then I think it's really up to two tracks on the Washington front, how the president and the Congress start to manage this. Things need to be underway relatively quickly. How much oversight is there? What is that debate like, and how does it affect the contours of the market reaction, how much liquidity there is out there, whether we see any more business failures or business problems or lack of liquidity affecting currently healthy businesses? And then on the presidential campaign track, we've said it all year. We've discussed it on this program. Mm. Which of these two guys can step forward and talk about the economy in a way that gives people assurance that they know what they're doing? It's now a bigger, even bigger part of the campaign dialogue and should be and will be. And it raises even more questions because I don't think either of them has stepped up on this issue, explaining their own policies and vision any more than they did before.
Nate Silver, how about the economy in the polls with this crisis unfolding right underneath the presidential campaign? How does it appear to be rippling through the poll numbers?
Well, you know, there hasn't been a lot of vision there. I think Mark is right. I think what Obama did on Friday night was to kind of point at himself and say, hey, middle class, you know, I'm your guy. He does have a tax cut. I'm surprised he hasn't talked about that a little bit more. But clearly, when the economy became the subject of the debate, you know, 2 weeks ago when, you know, Lehman Brothers collapsed, Obama shot up in the polls by about 4 or 5 points, like almost overnight. It's, you know, really night and day that if they're on this turf, the economy where McCain is not seen as necessarily being so experienced that, you know, then the kind of partisan idea advantage, then the Bush fatigue come into play, and McCain is kind of fighting an uphill battle.
Let's go to Barbara in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Barbara, you're on the air.
Hi, and guests. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'd like to get your perspective, all your perspective on this. Just what you're talking about is I watched the debate Friday night. I disagree with all of you about, to me, Obama hit it out of the park big time. And then, and I'll tell you why in a moment, but the pundits and analysts after the debate just never picked up on what I thought was so evident, which was that here we had two people. One, just right out of the last 8 years of being immature, angry, volatile, acting like total crisis management, being nasty, so impolite the whole time. And here we have Senator Obama being respectful, polite, gracious, and incredibly intelligent, incredibly mature, incredibly knowledgeable. It's all there together. Here you have the bully on the playground, and there is the principal next to him. And I just, afterward, not a word. Not a word from any analyst, not a word from you guys, not a word from anyone about this contrast. We've had this for 8 years, this bully. And I mean, I for one, you know. And
You've had enough of it, Barbara. We hear it. Jack Beatty, speak to Barbara's point here about demeanor. There has been a lot of talk in the last week about John McCain with his Hail Mary pass. And Nick Kristof, New York Times, says impulsive, impetuous, impatient, and says we've had enough of that. You know, Barbara sees a bully on the playground versus, I don't know, with Paul Newman in mind, maybe Cool Hand Luke there. But too cool for school, Jack?
Well, you know, she echoes the comment of John about the visuals in the debate. They were really bad for McCain. I mean, he's markedly shorter. That didn't help. And he just...
Short people unite for McCain.
And he grimaced and did not look at Obama and seemed to scorn him. And in one of these focus groups I looked at, especially the women in the group came back to just Barbara's point that that they liked the fact that Obama said, "I agree with McCain," and they saw in that a bipartisanship enacted. You know, with all talking about working across the aisle, well, it seemed as if right there he was working across the aisle, whereas McCain, with his scorn and his just his supercilious demeanor, there was no working across the aisle, however often he said he did do that. Mm. So I think that the visuals really worked very strongly against McCain.
Mark, how did you read the theater of character on display Friday night?
Well, I think they're both pretty likable guys. I mean, the negative stuff has started but not really gone intense, and they both are maintaining pretty positive images with the American people. I thought Barack Obama was more relaxed and calm. I'm not someone who's a frequent critic of Senator McCain's debate performances. I rated him quite highly during the campaign, the nomination debates. Mm-hmm. But I thought that, again, as I said at the very beginning, I thought he used too much Washington jargon, was too much telling his sort of old standby jokes, but in a shorthand manner that wouldn't have been accessible to a wide audience, and also in a quiet audience. If you're going to tell a lot of jokes, you want an audience that will laugh, but Jim Lehrer, the moderator, had so chided the audience, warned them not to be demonstrative, that I think a lot of the atmospherics fell flat. I think they're both likable. Again, it's subjective, but my sense is, in trying to put myself in the mind of a Columbus, Ohio housewife, I thought Barack Obama came across as more likable, more relaxed, and projected what he wanted to project better.
Nate Silver, in a nutshell, male-female breakdown in polling after the debates. How did Barack do? How about McCain?
Well, it's a pretty wide gap. I think it's going to remain wide until the election. I mean, Sarah Palin was the one thing that could have closed that gap, but she's becoming more of a liability than an asset for McCain. So we're going to see the gender gap maybe even larger than it was in 2004.
We'll come back and look more at the gender polling. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at the presidential campaign with 36 Days to go, McCain, Obama, and where they are pushing now. Mark Halperin is with us, editor-at-large and senior political analyst for Time. Nate Silver's here from 538.com, polling and political analysis at his website. Jack Beatty's here. Both candidates out after the debate over the weekend. Here's John McCain in Alexandria, Virginia, addressing the U.S. Sportsmen's Alliance, saying he's the one ready to lead.
They can tell the difference between mere self-confidence and an abiding confidence in our country. They know that the troops who are bravely fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan want to come home in victory and in honor.
Self-confidence and abiding confidence there. Barack Obama in Detroit on Sunday before a crowd of more than 35,000.
And I know these are difficult days, and nowhere have they been more difficult than in Michigan. Nowhere have they been more difficult than in Detroit. The auto industry knows something about hard times. So I know it's been hard. But here's what I also know. I know we can steer ourselves out of this crisis. Because that's who we are.
A little street talk in there and a little vision talk in Detroit. Nate Silver, we were talking about the gender factor in the polls. Let's sure. look at that and the Sarah Palin factor. How is that playing now with 5 weeks to go? How's it look?
Well, her approval ratings, her favorability scores have declined, you know, quite quickly here. I think they're originally, you know, as much as a plus kind of 30, and now some polls have her unfavorables exceeding her favorables. So it's been, you know, I think the Katie Couric interview was pretty damaging. I think actually the original Saturday Night Live skit actually was damaging too, because you could kind of poke fun of her in a way that didn't seem necessarily mean-spirited. But, you know, she's definitely on the spot here. Against Joe Biden on Thursday night. I think expectations are low, which will help her. But it's kind of like the reverse of, like, you know, Michael Phelps during the Olympics. Expectations only mean so much. You know, Michael Phelps always exceeded expectations. Mm-hmm. Sarah Palin, you know, if she's not ready, she might, you know, we'll see what kind of performance she has on Thursday. But it's a pivotal moment for her, absolutely.
And you were saying before the break that, what, Obama has a lead with female voters now? What does it look like?
That's right. I mean, I think it's about a 12 or 15 point gender gap, I want to say offhand, which is similar to 2004. And that probably, I don't think that'll change very much. I mean, partly because McCain is kind of, you know, he gets military veterans who are more likely to be men, so that's probably worth a couple of points at the margins. He is kind of very much a man's man, I think, so to speak. But that's been typical for a number of years. I think, you know, with Obama's position, Democratic positions on, you know, choice and all those other issues, I think is going to kind of make that a fairly permanent thing. And there doesn't seem to be that kind of security mom vote necessarily that there was in 2004, as kind of terrorism has faded a little bit from the dialogue.
Mark Halperin, how do you read the Sarah Palin effect at this point? Of course, there's a big debate on Thursday night with Joe Biden. But there was that bump. It was big. The GOP was very strongly head up about it, and Democrats, I think, fair to say, panicked after the GOP convention. How is that sorted out, Mark?
Well, again, things could change again because, as you suggested, the trajectory was up for Palin, and now it's come down a bit. I think what I've thought all along, which is this is not about Sarah Palin, it's about John McCain. And to the extent that Sarah Palin ends up looking in the eyes of many Americans, and certainly in the popular culture, as unqualified to be president, I think it will reflect badly on John McCain as having not taken this choice seriously for those who believe she's not qualified. Very perilous moment for her in this debate. That's why you see Senator McCain's two top aides deviating from worrying about the campaign overall to spending the next few days with her to prepare her for this debate. If Joe Biden handles himself well, if Sarah Palin comes across in that debate the way she has in most of the moments during these few interviews she's done, I think it will reflect badly on John McCain and hurt him.
Jack Beatty, Bill Kristol saying over the weekend, don't over-prepare Sarah Palin. Let the moose hunter be the moose hunter in these debates.
Well, we have to see how that works. I read in the Washington Post, Howard Kurtz reporting that CBS has, quote, even more damaging material on tape that they have not played from that Katie Couric interview. Now, will they play that tonight? I don't know. But, I mean, I think what people saw there was, I don't know whether you saw someone who was over-prepared. You certainly saw someone who was not qualified. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that. She just couldn't even conceptualize. Let's not even get into it, but her responses on, you know, Russia is there and Putin's overlooking us and we in Alaska.
Looming in our airspace.
Looming in our airspace and we get.
Like a Macy's Day Parade balloon.
I mean, where does Tina Fey stop and Sarah Palin begin? I mean, you can't caricature something like this.
And yet, Nate Silver, we were hearing on NPR News just this morning in Missouri, which has gone for the winner in a whole lot of elections for a long, long time. Sarah Palin's still seen as a strong positive in the rural vote that could very well turn the Missouri outcome.
Well, you know, the base still loves her, and that will protect the Republicans against getting totally killed in, like, the congressional races, I think. I mean, I've actually seen tapes of her debating in Alaska in 2006. Mm-hmm. When she's comfortable, she's actually not that bad. She's pretty decent. You know, she can be charming, certainly. We've seen that charisma. I think she's lost confidence. I think maybe the fact that the McCain campaign, you know, won't let her do a press conference, won't let her really kind of out on her own, maybe has kind of, you know, hurt her morale in a way. Morale is important in a presidential campaign. Yep. And that's why I think, you know, they're almost making matters worse. Because why did she get worse from the Charlie Gibson interview where she was not terrific but okay, mm-hmm. you know, to Katie Couric where she had more time to prepare and was frankly disastrous? You know, I think there is maybe a crisis of confidence. I think maybe giving her mixed messages on the debate might not be the best thing. But they are taking her to Arizona, letting her relax, see her family. It's probably the smartest thing to do. But, you know, how she's going to handle the spotlight again after getting these negative reviews, we'll have to see.
I think Bill Kristol's right. Let Palin be Palin. I mean, she comes on with a strong kind of gut sense of how to play. And, when I don't know, wind her up in the details, and you may just wind up her appeal. Tom is calling from Chesapeake, Virginia. Tom, you're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to reiterate what some of the other callers have been saying. I'm an officer in the military. I've got 26 years in the military. I started off in the Army, and now I'm an officer in the Navy. I've been around the world three times. I've been to Baghdad. I've worked in for a multinational force. I spent the last 7.5 years overseas.
And where do you come down, Tom?
Say again?
Where do you come down in this election season?
Well, initially, I was kind of undecided. But I am very much pro-Obama after watching McCain and his leadership style. My time overseas probably affected me. Most people around the world actually do love Americans. They're very frustrated with their administration, and they were quite surprised when we elected George Bush for a second time. I think we need someone who represents the the average American, who is articulate, who can express himself clearly and concisely. After watching McCain and Obama, I feel that Obama can do that. I think we need someone who's intelligent and who appears to be intelligent. We have paid for having someone represent us who may not appear to be all that on the ball. I have to be careful how I phrase that. But
how about Obama as commander-in-chief? Would you be happy to have him making the decision on go or no-go for the U.S. military, for you?
Absolutely. I was shocked when we went into Iraq without a coalition, without justification. I was shocked when we reported that mission was accomplished, and I was even more shocked when we left Afghanistan because we did take our eye off the ball. We should be in Afghanistan killing terrorists and actually fighting terrorism in Afghanistan, where the root of Al-Qaeda.
Tom, we've got it, and thank you very much for your call. Let me get another from St. Albans, Vermont. Sylvia, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
You know, McCain scares me. Last week, he was running around like a self-important little broody hen. He seemed to lose control of himself. I lived through the Cold War, and we seem to be on the edge of another one. And the wrong misstep could take us in the wrong direction. And I am not a Georgian. If McCain wants to be a Georgian, that's fine. I am not a Georgian. And when I listen to Palin talk about Russia overhead as this huge empire with such awe, with Russia moving into our hemisphere here with Chavez and Castro,
yep.
I'm scared of McCain.
Of Cold War talk. Sylvia, thank you. Mark Halperin, how about it? It's interesting that George W. Bush came in talking about a more humble foreign policy, about a humility. John McCain, in this election, after all the experiences of the last 7 or 8 years, not really talking humble, kind of talking tough.
Well, he certainly, it's one of the areas in which he certainly has differed from George Bush, been in some ways a more interventionist, a more activist president. But I think that's somewhat situational. And I think overall, one of the things that the recent events and the sort of daily back and forth the campaign has obscured is I really don't think there's much of a difference in overall worldview. Iraq as a big exception and not an insignificant one. But overall, between Barack Obama and John McCain, I think although a lot of neoconservatives have got his ear and have been influential in some positions he's taken, I think overall I don't know that he would govern that much differently or voters have much of a distinction to find between the two men.
Between Barack Obama and John McCain, Jack, what do you say?
Well, I in that connection, I was disturbed by the eagerness with which Obama agreed with McCain on NATO admission, or at least putting on the road to NATO admission, Ukraine and Georgia. That's something that really needs to be thought about. On the one hand, he says we need Russia on proliferation issues, notably with Iran. On the other hand, he says, oh, we have to set the machinery going to get Georgia and Ukraine into NATO. Those two things are not compatible. And a president has to choose. The higher value, as he himself said, is proliferation and Iran. And we are not Georgians and we are not Ukrainian. And whether they are in NATO or not is not a matter of our national security, whereas Iran and proliferation are. And I was very disappointed to see that from Obama.
Nate Silver, again, let's go to the polls. What about these two men on likely foreign policy posture? How do likely voters see them? Do they see them, as Mark Halpern says, as not necessarily all that different or as distinct?
Well, I think voters perceive some difference, but I think they don't really care very much about foreign policy apart from Iraq. If you kind of look at, you know, Peter Hart did a poll for NBC a couple of weeks ago where, you know, what's your most important issue? And it's like economy is 50 or 60%. Iraq, which has declined, is about, you know, 10 or 12%. And then you have kind of terrorism, which is, you know, 8 or 9%, then other foreign policy is like an asterisk, which means it's like, you know, just 1 or 2 points between Georgia and Afghanistan and Iran and proliferation and everything else. So, you know, whatever the differences are between them, it's probably not going to dictate the course of the campaign. And that's why on Friday night, I think John McCain, on kind of debating points, won most of the last half of the debate on Russia, on Georgia, on Iran, and so forth. But people don't really emphasize that nearly as much as they emphasize, you know, the economy. To win the economy debate by a little bit was much more helpful to Obama than, you know, losing the foreign policy debate.
Mark Halpern, you say maybe not that much difference in material policy, but when it comes to body language, whether it's on the stage or moving around the country in the last week and more, I mean, John McCain does look volatile. You know, the sort of Hail Mary pass last week, the body language of steadiness versus volatility, he's got to read volatile, doesn't he?
Well, volatile is one way to look at it. Let me just clarify on the foreign policy thing, because I don't want either of us to be besieged by angry emailers and callers.
Yes.
Go read the major foreign policy address that John McCain gave many months ago in Los Angeles, where he laid out his foreign policy vision. And except for the Iraq passages, it was not a speech of pablum, but it was a very firm speech. Go read it. You'll see that almost everything in the speech could have been uttered by Barack Obama. I'm not saying there are no differences, but I'm saying I think the differences are overstated in their worldview. In terms of McCain, the Bill Kristol column from Monday's New York Times, I think, is right, not right about Sarah Palin. I don't think Sarah Palin Unleashed is going to help John McCain. But I do think it's right about boldness. He must change the dynamic. He must do these so-called stunts, and in some cases that's what they are, in order to try to keep the dynamic away from talking about George Bush and John McCain and how they are linked. And I think being bold and being aggressive fits with his personality and serves that purpose, which he must achieve if he has a chance to win.
For campaign reasons, Valerie in Savannah, Georgia. You're on the air, Valerie.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I wanted to speak about the issue of the entire American population as a whole. And I think the decisions we make today is going to affect our grand and great grand. And we need to focus on the hurting and the suffering from lost jobs and lost homes. And I know foreign policy is important, but we must take care of home first, and then we can spread our wings abroad. And I, that's the only thing I wanted to say, that I read articles all the time about people being homeless and women that were secretaries sleeping in the cars.
Mm.
And we need to focus on homes.
Which candidate gives you more confidence on that front, Valerie? John McCain or Barack Obama?
When I watch the two candidates, it appears that Barack Obama does. But we need to really focus on homes. Because it's a very serious problem that I think will extend into two or three generations.
No question it's serious. Valerie, thanks very much for your call. Nate Silver, if the economy just keeps rolling and roiling through the end here, does that tilt it? Does that make it unclimbable for McCain?
It might, unless he kind of changes his messaging or has a kind of October surprise of some kind. I mean, I think McCain made some mistakes, you know, on Friday night about talking about, like, well, our corporate taxes are too high. You know, that might be good economics, but it's not good messaging when Obama's saying, hey, you know, look at me, you know, I'm going to be Mr. Middle Class for tonight. And I think it makes it harder for, you know, for McCain to go negative on Obama as well if, you know, Obama is identified as kind of the middle class's guy. So, I think he has to have his own middle class tax to get something out there, maybe another kind of stunt of some kind. But he has to kind of bridge that gap. You know, all of a sudden, he almost seemed more professorial on Friday, you know, talking about, you know, I mean, you know, and that's why a lot of pundits, I think, liked McCain's performance, because he did talk in a lot of detail about, you know, earmarks and spending, about certainly foreign policy, you know, but he wasn't making the argument simple like Obama, I think, did and hadn't been doing before.
Well, more debates to come. The vice president's on Thursday night. What an interesting campaign season it's been, and the numbers still turning interesting against the turn of events into this last 36 days. Nate Silver at 538.com. Thanks very much for being with us from Chicago today, Nate.
Of course. Thank you.
And Mark Halpern, editor-at-large and senior political analyst for Time magazine. You can see the page at time.com. Mark, it's always terrific to have you. Thank you very much. Thanks for your time today.
Always great to be on. Thanks.
Jack Beatty, off we go. It's the home stretch. Thanks for being with us, Jack.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.